Welcome to Tuned In with Mike Johnson, a public service of Mount Wilson FM Broadcasters and Global Jazz Incorporated. Now, here's Mike.
Thank you, Al Verde, and good morning, everybody. Welcome to Tuned In from Mount Wilson FM Broadcasters and Global Jazz Incorporated. My guest this morning, we're going to have two guests. Later on, we'll be speaking to Dave Folds. He runs Crony's Restaurant up in the Oxnard area, and that's going to be related to how COVID is affecting his business. But right now, we're going to begin this morning with Dr. Joseph Chan. He is the Emergency Care Center Medical Director with Beverly Hospital in Montebello. Doctor, good morning.
Good morning. Thank you for having me.
Thank you for being with us. We're going to be speaking this morning to Dr. Chan about COVID-19, as of course there has been all kinds of unfortunate news about the flare-up that's happened here. Doctor, I want to just take it right from your perspective right now. Why is the flare-up happening?
Well, we definitely appear to be in a third wave. If you look at the graph, we've had three sort of spikes with the overall trend always going up. So in L.A., they've recently taken us back to the most restrictive or purple tier, mm-hmm. and that's based on the number of positives that we're seeing based on a population level, so cases out of 100,000. So that's reached the threshold of which they think that it's likely to spread when it's starting to get to spread more exponentially, or when they think there might be a threat if it continues to rise at that level to the healthcare system, where it would start to threaten reaching max capacity or hospital ICU beds. That's when they decide to pull back on ability of businesses to practice in certain ways. So I know that they've restricted a lot of businesses that do indoor only and reducing a lot of capacity down to 25%. And it does seem like these are necessary steps that have to be taken based on what we're seeing in the data.
Based upon what you've experienced there at the hospital, talk about your personal experience. I mean, dealing with people who are dealing with living with COVID, I mean, we can hear about these tales from people on television, but I'm going to talk to you kind of as somebody who has never experienced it or never dealt with it directly. How can you give me your best explanation, if you can, about a typical person who has come in and you've had to deal with who has COVID?
It's kind of varied throughout the last 9 months or so, because in the beginning, a lot of what we were seeing is people that were not too sick, because the testing really wasn't as widespread as we would have liked. So right. Without having great access, a lot of people were coming to the hospital just to get tested, even when they didn't have significant symptoms. And I think that to a large degree, the public health messages have been effective that, you know, if you do get tested, number one, testing has been expanded. So we're seeing less of the people that are coming in just because they can't find any other way to get tested. That's number one. Mm-hmm. Number two, the public health messages about if you're just having a sniffle or a cough, you can stay home as long as you're not having one of the more severe symptoms like shortness of breath, chest pain, neurologic symptoms, things like that. And so what's happened over the last 9 months is that the patients that we see tend to be sicker, more acute, more high likelihood of needing to be hospitalized or being in the ICU, because I think testing has become more widespread and messaging has become more effective. So most of the people that we're seeing have what we call lower respiratory tract symptoms, or at least coughing and usually also shortness of breath.
Now, you see, we saw pictures the other night on the news of these long lines at Dodger Stadium for people who are lined up to get tested because they don't know whether they have the virus or not. In general, for places like that where you have hundreds, not hundreds, but tens of thousands of people in line, what's the turnover to get people results of the test?
I have to speak from my own personal experience, and I've been tested 6 or 7 times because it's, number one, LA County's services are free, and number two, their results are very quick. I've been tested, actually all 6 or 7 times that I've gotten tested was at Dodger Stadium, and I've gotten test results back within 24 hours. So I would say that the LA County's efforts have been hugely successful. I can't speak for every testing site because I've only, again, been to the one, but I've been very happy with the results.
Now, you talked about the fact that the state is changing the way that people are going to be able to do things here momentarily. It seems like, you know, it's going to become a little bit more restrictive here in the days ahead just based upon the way the numbers are skewing. It's interesting because, you know, as I do my day-to-day business here, trying to get things done at the radio station, there are only two or three different places I might stop on my way here. And it seems like the majority of folks I see are for the most part wearing masks, which I guess is frustrating on some level, because if you have people who are following through properly, but the numbers still go up, it's tough, isn't it?
Yeah, I think that largely what we view as transmission, or what the governor is saying they think most of the transmission is coming from, is actually between households. So not when people are out in public. I agree with you. I think for the most part, in most counties when I'm around, in at least in Los Angeles, and from what my family in other counties like San Francisco has said, they mask wearing tends to be pretty uniform and pretty compliant.
Right.
It's when we let our guard down. And, you know, out of all the staff in our emergency department, out of anyone that's gotten sick with COVID, almost every single person or staff has gotten sick outside the hospital. And we deal with patients, the sickest COVID patients, the ones we have to intubate, do procedures where there's all kinds of, you know, saliva spreading everywhere. And very few of the staff have gotten sick. And of the ones that have gotten sick in the ER, not a single one has gotten sick in the hospital from a patient. It's always been outside the hospital when they were meeting with somebody else, or had they had their guard down or didn't have a mask on or something like that. So I really think that it's not the times that we're wearing the masks where people are getting infected. It's the times where we let our guard down and don't have a mask, or eating with somebody that we're not sure, you know, that they've been out and about. And that's really when people are getting infected. And that's, I think, a lot of the guidance that's coming. So a lot of the recent spikes, I think, had to do with perhaps Halloween, but also as it's getting colder, people are gathering indoors more, mm-hmm. and that's what they're concerned about with Thanksgiving coming up, that people are going to be spending a lot of time indoors with bigger groups, and that's really what's going to drive the case rate up.
My guest is Dr. Joseph Chan. He is the Emergency Care Center Medical Director with Beverly Hospital in Montebello. This is Tuned In from Mount Wilson FM Broadcasters and Global Jazz Incorporated. And again, Doctor, thank you for your time this morning to help out and get the information out to the public. One of the things, Doctor, that you mentioned, Thanksgiving is coming up. The holidays are just around the corner, and you made reference there earlier to people laying their guard down. So many people, of course, you know, have such lovely memories and cherished times in the past where they think about Thanksgiving and family and Christmas and this sort of thing. It's the sort of thing this year where maybe this should be a year we take off Thanksgiving. What do you think about that?
Yeah, I think that that is the general recommendation. If your family can come to an agreement that it's best not to get together as a household, then it's probably best to do that. But I think they also are giving some measured recommendations, not endorsements, but measured recommendations, because we realize with a lot of education, you know, abstinence only obviously has limits, because some people are determined to see other people. And so to try to give people guidance and guardrails if they, you know, feel that they need to. And so those recommendations are basically to have no more than three households, so yourself and then two other households meeting, and that would be the absolute maximum, but obviously minimum would be preferred. And then also to make sure that it is outdoors and to minimize the amount of time that you have the mask off, so only when you're eating. And, you know, if you can have households at separate tables that are 6 feet apart, so you're still together, but you know, separate from each other, at least from a distance, again, that's preferred, so that it ends up that they have a fever the next day, that they still had relatively good precautions and safety from the others. So that's the recommendations that are out there, but obviously the least amount of spread is possible.
Doctor, from the days earlier in the year when the virus first came here and we were, of course, you know, having to figure out what it was all about early on, I mean, and now, of course, there's testing, and that's good news, and there's talk of a shot that you could take possibly later on this year or into next year sometime that hopefully would immunize people against the virus. The research that's being done on COVID-19, how hopeful are you with where the scientists are at as far as trying to figure things out?
Yeah, with viruses, therapies have always been elusive with viruses. So I think really the biggest effort, appropriately so, has been on preventing getting the infection in the first place. Mm-hmm. And so that's vaccination. There's definitely been a lot of encouraging news with two of the biggest companies, Pfizer and Moderna, coming out with vaccines that have been initial data showing that they're over 90% effective. And really the next challenge will be I think, a public health push, education push, so that people aren't afraid to take the vaccine. And then secondly, also just ramping up production because of all the people that need it. Initially, I think the public is obviously a little bit wary, but there's going to be a rollout. It's mainly going to go to healthcare professionals first, and that's because you can't, if you're sick, the last person that you want to be infected by is the person that's supposed to be taking care of you.
Sure.
And I think that number one, they're going to have a lot more data after they give it to all the healthcare professionals. So I think that's another group of people that they'll be able to see case studies of who's getting it. But by and large, most of the people in the side effects of the two ones that I mentioned have just been side effects of, you know, viral-type illnesses, which is part of the body's natural response to seeing something that's foreign to it. So body aches, chills. And the only two ones that had any serious complications, those studies from AstraZeneca and Johnson & Johnson, both of those studies were stopped. So they haven't observed any of those kinds of more serious ones with the ones that I just mentioned, Moderna and Pfizer. But they're going to continue to study those and obviously watch patients longer term to see if anything develops later.
You know, you mentioned their education and getting people comfortable with the concept of trying, again, vaccinated for the virus. You know, there are people listening people that I know who are still convinced that when you get the flu shot, you're having the flu injected into your body. And, you know, obviously that's not the case, but it's the sort of thing where people have perceptions about what things are.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think that there can be some misconceptions, and partly because there are certain vaccines that do inject inactivated or whole virus or lessened potent viruses. And those are usually the ones that are nasal. And this is not one of those types of vaccines. This is actually a new type of vaccine. And what it does is it takes an RNA and it develops, it allows the body to produce a protein that's related to the virus, that's found on the virus, but it's only one small part of the virus. There's no way that this could even mutate into the full virus because it's just one component. It's like taking the hubcap off of a car and then circulating that around, and so people can see it and recognize it, but that's the type of car that you have to look out for. So it's just one part of the whole virus. As far as public health education, you know, these are studies that are done in tens of thousands of people, even at this stage, and again, they're going to expand it even more, but the Moderna vaccine has 30,000 volunteers, and the Pfizer vaccine had 44,000 volunteers, and they did not see any evidence of a single serious side effect, like things people talk about, like neurologic complications like Guillain-Barré disease or transverse myelitis. And so if you look at that and you think that there's a less than a 0.01% chance of having a serious side effect, and then you look at the mortality rate, not just the complication, but the death rate that we currently know in the United States of COVID-19, depending on which age range, but the overall mortality rate is about 2% from what we understand based on the data, the case fatality ratio. If you compare those two, it's really no comparison. Even if you think that there is a chance of having one of these complications, I think it pales in comparison to the risk of death. And also the risk of giving a virus which could be fatal to one of your loved ones. I think so. It's not just, you know, your own risk of mortality, but I think one of the things that weighs on everybody, including healthcare providers, is could I not die myself or have a serious complication but myself, but then pass it on to one of my loved ones, one of my children, one of my parents? And I think that's really where it encourages everyone to really participate in the vaccination process.
Just again, to get personal for a moment here, Doctor, the age of the youngest person that you've treated for COVID-19?
Personally, I haven't had any pediatric patients myself that I've diagnosed with it. I've definitely had people in their 20s. Everyone that I've diagnosed personally have been adults. In our hospital, we definitely have had some as low as in the 5 to 12 range. We haven't had any infants yet that have been diagnosed.
I just bring that up for you because there is, I've heard people have the perception that this is something that children cannot be affected by.
Oh, that's definitely not true. Yeah, they've definitely seen cases of this at the children's hospitals in Los Angeles. It tends to be less, and I think a lot of that tends to be because we know that the kids tend to get less severe symptoms. One of the things that is theorized about the disease, not the virus, but the disease, is that a lot of the severe symptoms are caused by an overactive, over-exaggerated immune response. And because children have less developed immune systems, they may not have that exaggerated response. And so sometimes it may not be that the kids actually have are immune to it, but because they develop less symptoms, people are less, think less to test somebody when they're not really having much symptoms. So it doesn't come to mind. So there may be more asymptomatic spread among kids than we think, but it's something to consider. So you definitely, the kids can get infected.
You mentioned earlier also that, that the people you you're seeing now in the hospital, for the most part, are really more likely with the virus versus not, if I'm reading you correctly, versus the earlier days, maybe earlier in 2020 when people, you know, didn't know and would just show up all the time. I'm guessing at this point now that the people who have been educated enough to understand that, you know, it's not just the flu, everyone I'm guessing is taking this obviously very seriously for their own health benefit, let alone for their loved ones.
Yeah, I feel blessed that in California, I think a lot of the patients that we are seeing and their families are taking it very seriously and understand the seriousness of this. I do think that the public health has been doing a good job in California, at least spreading the message. I think the communities that I practice in have definitely been taking it seriously. In fact, oftentimes when we see a huge rise in cases in the news, we often sometimes see paradoxically a decreased volume or traffic coming to the hospital because people don't want to come to the hospital because there may be a lot of other COVID patients there at that time.
Right.
But all hospitals at this time point, including our own, have created separate tracks for people who may be having viral illnesses from those who don't, to try to separate those populations to prevent any cross-contamination. So if anyone is having severe medical symptoms, chest pains, abdominal pains, vomiting, things like that, they can still be taken care of safely and away from other COVID patients. So I think most of the public knows that, but just to reassure them that with all the hospitals time to prepare and to keep them safe as well as the staff.
Doctor, thank you very much for your time this morning. I know it's a very busy time for you helping out with all the patients with COVID. So I appreciate you breaking away here for a few minutes to join us on Tuned In.
Of course. All right.
Thank you, Doctor. That is Dr. Joseph Chan. He is the Emergency Care Center Medical Director with Beverly Hospital in Montebello. And we'll be right back with more here on Tuned In.